Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Nick, we are only a few weeks away from SummerSlam. It's earlier this summer than usual. And Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar is the main event. And tonight was the first big step towards hyping that match that I feel there are anecdotal indications of apathy towards this rematch, this audible of a rematch. And then we had Roman Reigns, the Usos, and Paul Heyman stand in the ring, and Reigns and Heyman did their thing. How did it work for you? What'd you think of the step that they took to build anticipation for that?
Well, it might have been a step forward towards SummerSlam, but wow, this felt like a step backwards. It felt like 6 months ago, an opening segment that was teleported from a previous SmackDown that suddenly was just placed in this week's show, and you kind of had to shake off the cobwebs of like, oh, wow, we're doing this thing. We're really just replicating the WrestleMania storyline, which was a replication of the day one storyline, and you go backwards. You know, there's not a whole lot fresh here. The only thing that is fresh that exists is the possibility of Theory. I almost said Austin Theory with the briefcase and what that could mean for the outcome. I think people expect that the outcome will matter in this match. I don't really get the feeling that we're going to have a SummerSlam that mirrors the WrestleMania ending, but it's the Brock Lesnar of it all. It's the feeling that, you know, we're uncertain of when, how often Roman's going to be around, and it just doesn't feel as something worth getting committed to as a viewer. And that's a big problem heading into SummerSlam, which, as you say, Wade, is really just around the corner. It's so early this year, and we're going to blink, and before you know it, we're going to be there. And I don't know that they're going to gain traction to make this some kind of mega match to watch.
Well, what do you think they could do in taking the reality of the situation, which is, you know, that Brock Lesnar's not going to become a full-time every week guy. Sure. But, you know, what do they do to make the most of what they have to work with this audible?
Well, I think they're going to really be further emphasizing Theory with the Money in the Bank briefcase. I think they recognize that there's energy there. And I also just get the feeling that the days of having the Money in the Bank briefcase around for very long are kind of numbered, especially with the placement of the show in the calendar year to not pair too much with the Royal Rumble and so on and so forth. I think they're going to really rely on that. They've been just talking about that incessantly, it feels like, as a possibility. And honestly, when you take a look at, you know, if what's reasonable with when to use the Money in the Bank, at the end of a last man standing match, you can't really think of a much better time to use it. So I think they're going to double down on that effort. You have to get Brock there. Even Brock is kind of one of those things of you get upset with him when he's not there. Because, you know, he's not there, but when he is there, he's kind of hard to dislike because there's just so much, you know, grandeur that I think he carries. So we have to get him on the show, and we have to keep Roman on the show. They create money and energy together. It may not be new, but it does feel important, and I think that that's a big part of it. And I just think continuing to move down the path that it has worked for the past year, really, of storylines. It's not that it's going to be problematic heading into SummerSlam, but is it going to be brand new? Is it going to be exciting? Wait, I got to be frank with you. I don't know that there is something new and exciting they can add to it. I think that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns and the Usos are a great act, but it does feel like, you know, there's a big headwind. There's an uphill challenge to get people to look at this as fresh or relevant, or because Reigns and Lesnar should feel like this kind of epic changing of the guard, almost like an Undertaker streak. Can someone end this nearly 1,000-day Reigns reign? And that's what they're going for, is that there's this huge stakes of the unified title that Reigns rarely defends, as an understatement. And the fact that, you know, he's going to be the longest reigning champion for, what did Heyman say, 35 years? I can't remember the exact time frame. And so there's something there to work with, but it feels too soon. And I'm just not sure that Lesnar showing up as the same Brock Lesnar saying and acting in the same way is going to be enough to get people excited about this. And I mean, yes, you add the Theory, agitator, cash in potential, and that is a net positive in terms of, you know, giving everybody talking points and looking at forward to the show and imagining might he not cash that in. So they have some things to work with, but they can't phone it in, and I don't think they can just rinse and repeat this for the next couple weeks before the show.
No, maybe not. You know, here's the thing, Wade. The truth of the matter is the lack of presence of Roman week in, week out is more damaging than anything involving Brock Lesnar not being as present. The reason being, our bodies, our senses have gotten used to Roman being there every week. We never got used to Brock being there every week. So when you remove him, you know, he's a force multiplier. He is the driving force of everything that happens on the show. And when he's taken from there, it feels like there's a massive gap. Whereas when Brock's there, it just feels special. That's a nuanced difference that WWE really has to navigate to not feel like they're presenting a lesser product. What I want them to delve into to really make SummerSlam interesting, though, is there is this precedent set with Money in the Bank being used in matches involving Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns that might be worth tapping into. Meaning, let's say that they really doubled down on the energy of, as you recall, WrestleMania 31, when Seth Rollins came down mid-match. And if you recall, Wade, it turned itself into a triple threat match suddenly, right? So if that happens at SummerSlam, mid-match, maybe Theory then can declare which of the championships he's going for. Let's say he's able to separate them. And there's really still a possibility at that point you leave SummerSlam with Brock Lesnar winning whatever that new match is evolved into and Roman Reigns, and you have them both as champions exiting that show. What I'm saying is if they can really get into the possibility, what are the options at play if Theory does cash in, that might be enough to draw people's interest heading into the show because everything else feels old. Paul Heyman doubling down on a Brock Lesnar with his back against the wall, that ain't it, Wade. It is not it. We've been there, done that. And Roman definitively put him down at WrestleMania. There's no threat there.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show and then get to our callers who can lead the way through other happenings on this show, other SummerSlam developments, a couple matches set up for next week, SmackDown, a match advertised all afternoon, all week, for 2 hours during SmackDown, and not delivered on. We got Drew squashing Butch instead of Sheamus against Drew. I'll get Nick's thoughts on that after we introduce the show here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, July 8th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter for 30-plus years and also the website pwtorch.com for over 20 years and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, along with the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. In fact, yesterday on our Blue Logo Show, this is our Red Logo Show, just search Wade Keller, subscribe to both, they're both free. On the Blue Logo Show, our flagship podcast featured Zach Adorn, PW Torch Assistant Editor, joining me to talk in-depth about various WWE and AEW topics. If you haven't checked that out yet, be sure to do so. Hit refresh on the blue feed, or you can always find the link at pwtorch.com. But if you do search PW Torch, you'll also be able to find the PW Torch Daily Cast that you can subscribe to for free and the PW Torch VIP podcast feed where we drop free samples of VIP shows on occasion, including every once in a while, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. And the Nick I speak of is the Nick that you have listened to for the first 10 minutes of the show. Nick Barbati, welcome back to the co-host chair tonight.
You know, you sounded much more excited to say Zach Haydorn's name, for the record. I want that noted,
well,
and I think
glad.
The callers will recognize that. Where's he, Wade? You know, I'm the one here with you. Let's go.
I mean, you might be channeling Lacey Evans there, Nick. I'm sorry about that, but I'm really not sorry because I guess my inflection matches my emotions, and I guess I should be proud of that.
Yes, that sounds good. Wade, I'm happy to be here. You know I love this on a Friday night. Always getting a chance to talk to you. Wade, we've spoken on some very important days in wrestling history. As you recall, we're almost at the year anniversary when you and I were on the call for that. Was it the Rampage show when CM Punk made his debut? Listen, today's news story might not be covered on the show, but it certainly is there. We have been through quite a bit of wrestling together, so always glad to be here with you.
Well, I assume you're talking about the potential end of Vince McMahon as a what phrase would you use? What's coming to an end for Vince McMahon besides potentially his ability to be a public figure at the head of a wrestling company, depending on how networks and sponsors and partners feel about it.
Yeah.
Something feels like
– something feels different.
Yeah, it feels like – I don't know if it was a tipping point tonight, but it really amplified what's going on. And, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you say what's at the end. You know, in many ways, it's the end of an era, which is a cliche, certainly. But let's say he himself isn't removed physically from our, presence by some twist of, fate that we don't see. It's still an end of an era of behavior, I think. I think that no longer can these things kind of be just kept in the shadows. In many ways, Wade, this is something that I almost think, when the check was really coming due on people years ago through the Me Too and the Time's Up kind of stuff and all of that, it's almost like you braced yourself because you felt like wrestling was going to get hit harder than it was. And, there were certainly rumblings in the news, back then. But, this felt like, the level of defiance that you can feel, like Vince McMahon coming out on the shows once the initial story first broke with the Wall Street Journal or wherever it was. Was it the Washington Times? What's the paper? Wall Street Journal, yeah. The defiance there, quite frankly, that felt of a previous era in itself. And I do feel like this is now the checks are coming due here on Vince McMahon. And eventually, there's so much news piles up when just as a culture, people just don't turn away from it anymore. And it feels like that there's going to have to be a major shift. There's no way that there isn't a shift in how this company does business moving forward. And I think it's only the start. It's only the beginning. And, it's a sad ending. It's, you and I could probably spend hours dissecting it. I'm sure Tom and I will tomorrow. But there is so much to unpack here, and it's really the story of power and wealth in America and just coming to the fruition in our wrestling screens at this point right now. And eventually, there is always an end game on people, regardless of how powerful they are. And I actually feel like we're there.
Yeah, Vince McMahon can stay in his position if he wants to. He literally can, but it could bring WWE down if he does. That's kind of the point I'm making is if Fox Network says we don't want to associate with you, if NBC Universal says this Peacock thing, there's a clause in there and we don't want to continue doing business with you, and then you have, let's say, Vince flying out to Vancouver to hang out with John Cena to try to talk him into a match, according to Fightful. Maybe Cena, is like, Vince, I can tell you on the phone or I can tell you in person, you're not someone I can safely associate with right now with my aspirations. I'm sorry. And then who knows about Rock and WrestleMania? It can just be one thing after another. It's not about $12 million in hush payments. And that's not to discount that, but that's not going to be enough to take Vince McMahon down. It's the fact that right now, and there was a local radio show here that was talking about, well, fans stop watching WWE, ratings drop. It's like, no, I was at SmackDown when the first news broke at Target Center when Vince came out, and the fans are bowing and worshiping and popping and cheering. And, that was sort of a PR campaign by Vince to show the world that the fan base still loves him. They're not fazed by this. But so, I think fans will just be like, that's Vince being Vince. That's his gimmick. It's ruthless aggression. It's grapefruits. It's testosterone. It's manhood. It was another time. Come on. He's a legend. I think a lot of people feel that way. Give me my sports entertainment. But boy, tell you what, Cena and Rock don't want to take chances. NBC Universal, Fox maybe don't want to. How many sponsors are going to have hashtags and emails going, why are you sending money to this company with this guy defiantly staying in position? And I think that's what we can keep an eye on. Now, there could be other things at play too, but that seems to be the way, what might be, and that's why I don't think there'll be like a resignation, Monday over this. I think there'll have to be more signs from Vince that there just is no other choice because he'd be hurting something he spent his life building up. Your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, well, I just think here's the thing. When it comes to these other companies, NBC, all those folks, They're not dealing with a 50-year-old. They're not dealing with a 40-year-old. They're not even dealing with an early 60-year-old. This is a man into his 70s. I mean, they need to play for the future. And Vince is not it at this point to be the one to really hold up the progress and the success of the company at this point in his career. I mean, it's at some point he needs to pick whether he is really open to permanently and severely damaging his company, his baby, which – you know, that seems impossible to think that, you know, in the position he's in to want to relinquish it. But it's the reality of it. I mean, you referenced all these names here. You're absolutely right. I mean, why would they want to be touch this and be associated with it? But here's the thing, Wade. The scary part about it is there's still that undercurrent of, despite the news that came out today, there could still be more. And it's not even necessarily attached to Vince himself, but the culture that he has allowed. So it's like, how deeply are we going to peel back this onion? And I think that reality is the thing that's probably the most scary for any investors. And that's what worth alone, looking at that culture and all that it has entailed for many, many years, that alone is worth really just hitting a fast reset for. And you know what? Vince should just get out of it. I mean, and that seems, again, crazy and probably very naive and all that stuff. I mean, but there's always going to be an endpoint. There was always going to be one. But this is a point for him. If he really thinks that the behavior that he was exhibiting or that he encouraged is going to be so, you know, it's that him being held accountable for it is so absurd, then this isn't the right time for him to be in business, period. Because it's just, that's not the lay of the land that we're in right now. Sorry.
Yeah. The stock market was up just a tinge today, but WWE stock was down 2%. Mm-hmm. That's down a little more than you would anticipate looking at, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average or NASDAQ or, you know, whatever you would compare WWE to, but it's not a lot. And so investors are not panicking, but part of that could be investors might think, you know what, WWE doesn't need Vince McMahon. And I do wonder where Vince's mindset is when it comes to his daughter, Stephanie, and Paul Levesque, Triple H. You know, Paul's been through a health scare. And, you know, is a changed man in certain ways, I'm told, and, you know, kind of realizes a certain chapter is behind him. He's back at the Performance Center. This is still something he has a passion for. He's had a practice run running NXT. And Stephanie, by all accounts, has grown up a lot. She's raised daughters. She's, you know, at times downplayed her role in order to be, spend time with her family. But she might be looking at this family business and what her dad's going through and just thinking now's the time. And if she has some allies in WWE, you know, Stephanie and Hunter can still be a power couple. And Vince can, you know, who by all accounts really genuinely loves being a grandpa, and he might not have a choice and he might be able to rationalize, you know, now is the time. And, you know, he might voluntarily actually step aside with some, of course, unofficial communications with Hunter and Steph, but he's not showing up at the office, showing up at the live events and running things. I mean, I'm not ruling that out as something relatively imminent. The inner workings of that family dynamic, you know, are never going to be completely transparent. And I think with Stephanie back in this role and how popular she is with today's WWE roster for the most part, and, yep, you know, there's some people who used to be enemies of her in that company and management who aren't anymore. They see her in positive light in a way that they didn't 15 years ago. It could be, you know, we could be in for something happening quickly too, not Vince just stubbornly holding out until there's no choice, you know, weeks or months from now when more stuff comes up.
Well, here's the other thing. I don't care how many pictures you take at a UFC event together, she's still her mother's daughter. And, you know, this is not the most flattering view for Linda McMahon's public persona to go out in either. So I think that there is a story to write here, and it's that the daughter of Vince, in this case of the father, is able to come through and right the wrongs. And I think that that's a story that we're going to live long enough to see, and I don't think it's going to be that far off.
Well, I you're absolutely right to bring up Linda and what this does to the reputation of I don't know if reputation is the right word. What it does to reputation,
sure,
of Vince McMahon, but what it does to the family pride and, you know, how Stephanie feels about that. And then you just have the whole thing about Stephanie stepping away from the company and that was a, you know, I was told a big deal, but it was not something that was going to likely come out, that it was, you know, very, very very much a personal situation that went beyond, I want to spend more time with my family, or went beyond, I got to spend more time with Paul during his recovery. And then you had sort of the public burial. How did those stories get out about Stephanie being replaced in her job because they could find better people? And was that lashing out at her? And what kind of succession style, palace intrigue is going on? What kind of jostling for power is going on? The palace intrigue in this whole situation is fascinating. We may or may not ever get an honest, detailed reveal of everything. But as this plays out, I think some people will talk once it's clear what direction things are going in terms of who ends up holding power in the next days, weeks, and months. And, if this is the end of Vince McMahon running WWE, WWE's in a great place financially, and they have sort of a conveyor belt process to producing the content that they have with these guaranteed deals. And they actually have a buffer built in for somebody new. If someone took over creative and the role that Vince has on the creative side and to a degree the business side, but he's, as involved as he is in that, he's surrounded himself with people who probably won't skip much of a beat in his absence. But on the creative side, there's a buffer in there for someone to kind of make their mark and make some mistakes. So, this could be a really interesting week or two, but also year or two in the history of this industry.
Yeah, and just because there isn't, let's say there's not breaking news of a resignation or anything within the past next week, 2 weeks, that doesn't mean it's not imminent. Again, you don't know what's still coming up in the investigation. This is all that's leaked. Can you imagine what hasn't come out yet? I mean, I'm sure there's still quite a lot.
And it could come down to, the board saying we've investigated a lot. Obviously, somebody's leaking material from within.
Sure.
Well, obviously, but it seems apparent somebody within WWE is leaking material to the Wall Street Journal. And that is fascinating. Who is responsible for that? And what is their motivation? And does someone go to Vince McMahon and go, do you want the spigot to be turned off? Or are you ready for more? Is it time to do the right thing? Be a grandpa and step aside, and whatever his relationship is with Stephanie, maybe he can still steer the ship from afar, or maybe not. And maybe he wants to do something his dad couldn't do, which is sit back and watch what happens when somebody else runs the ship. But man, Vince loves this. It's the only thing he knows. And you do wonder, and this isn't generating sympathy for him. It might sound like it. But don't read into it in that way. But what does Vince just fall apart and crumble if he doesn't have a place to go to work and to be obsessed? What kind of introspection? What kind of empty feeling does he have? That whole story, may or may not come out too if he steps away. But sometimes, when that purpose in life is not there at that age, does he have something else he can do that'll fill his time? Is it catching up on the great prestige TV series? Maybe he finally has time to watch Succession. I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, by the way, Wade, I think it is okay to call the situation sad and sad for all involved, sad for someone who's lived in a ivory castle for so long, he doesn't have a sense of reality on acceptable behavior. And, at the end of the day, I don't think it's ironic that this past year's WrestleMania had a strong emphasis on him. And honestly, in retrospect, was kind of a good, notable way for him to go out.
Yeah. All right, well, let's shift back to SmackDown. I'm glad that we did cover that. You and Tom Colley will be talking about that on tomorrow's VIP exclusive, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. So if you want more discussion on this, there'll be a lot more. I'll be talking with Rich Fan on the next episode of Everything, another VIP show that I do during the week. And Todd Martin and I will be talking about it. I'm sure it'll be the topic on other shows. So go VIP if you haven't yet and get the full Torch audio experience, pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can subscribe with credit card, debit card, PayPal, with your Apple account on your iPhone. Real easy to sign up if you're an iPhone user. Just search PW Torch and subscribe to the black logo show, and then upgrade to the full VIP feed. Or you can also subscribe through Patreon if you're part of that ecosystem and are comfortable there. Lots of ways to get our VIP audio, and full details are at pwtorch.com/goVIP. All right, Nick, let's there's a lot more to talk about on SmackDown SmackDown, and we may have an on-site correspondent joining us in just a bit. So we'll break in, and when we see, it's Andrew who is planning to call in from being at the show tonight. So we'll break in at some point with him, but let's continue talking about the TV show itself and the on-air product. And we'll begin with Mike from Atlantic City. Mike, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What stood out on SmackDown tonight for you?
First off, Nick, how you guys doing? I was thinking of you, Nick, in Atlantic City yesterday when I was looking at the Ocean Casino, because I remember you saying,
yeah, you got
you were there back in June, right?
I was, yeah. About, was it like 3 weeks ago or so? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, what was it? What is it you do again? I'm sorry. Like,
it's a play. I wish I could sing. No. It's a play called My Big Gay Italian Wedding, and I am the villainous ex-boyfriend trying to ruin the wedding, which, you know, I have to tell you, me playing the jilted ex-lover who wants everyone else to fail around them, not that much acting for the record.
Awesome.
Interesting. But yeah, I guess I'll kick off, Wade, with Liv, because I was thinking of you, Wade, when Liv won the Money in the Bank match, because I remember you saying that you were the least intrigued by Liv and Lacey if they won the briefcase. So, you know, I was thinking all week, like, once she won the briefcase, especially when she cashed in on Rousey, did that win you over? Like, you know, when she won over Rousey, won the title, like, did your opinion change? Like, were you excited and everything? Like, how did you feel?
I actually think that her performance Monday and Friday has done more than the moment itself last Saturday. I felt like Liv came up short in looking like she was coming across as a top-tier performer on the mic or in the ring, and in terms of crowd reaction. This wasn't – I was – it's not even not being sold on her. I just felt she got the opportunity. I was rooting for her to succeed, and I don't think she did. But I actually think this is kind of working out well. You know, this might not be another audible depending on Charlotte's schedule and how that all played out. But she is so earnest and so believable in – this sort of being, you know, it's kind of what bonded people to Sasha Banks early on and some other wrestlers over the years too, male and female for that matter, where winning the title just seems genuinely to be this dream moment. I thought it was really smart tonight, by the way, specifically on tonight's show, to have Michael Cole lead her through the interview. I think that she's better in that situation than where sometimes she can get a little lost. I don't know if lost is a word, but just not commanding the time she's given mid-ring when she's standing alone. And, you know, having Natalya come out, Rhonda come out, I think she played well off of them. And I think they learned what she can do well, and they're giving her a chance to do that well. I'm still skeptical that she's going to be a top-tier player in 4 months. I think that this is a fun story for the summer, but I'm not ruling it out either, because I do think she's found her voice and her lane a little bit more this week than I had thought prior. Nick, I'm really good to hear your thoughts.
Well, as you may or may not know, Wade, I predicted her victory weeks out heading into.
And I thought you were crazy.
Well, and here I'm on the call tonight.
Exactly.
Then you give me a microphone. Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing. I get you when – Wade, you said she's earnest or whatever.
Earnest.
The word, earnest,
yeah.
Yes. You know, to me, it just comes down to her being very likable. And it's not a matter of, you know, deeming whether a female performer is likable enough and all those kind of stereotypes. She's truly someone that you just will to succeed, because she just seems like such a charming, you know, kind person. And that resonates on the TV screen. Wait, I have to tell you this. I'm very conscious of what my casual friends say about wrestling. And I have to say, one of the names that they always, always pull out to me as someone of interest to them is Liv Morgan. She does do something, I think, for people that, you know, is instantly, she's memorable in terms of just, you know, I think it's not a confidence thing, because I think that actually helps her by not being overly confident. She's just something, she just connects, I think, to an average viewer in a way as someone who's very memorable and just seems like someone worth rooting for. I think that is carrying her quite a bit. You know, there's still a level with her where she feels a bit of a come down from the real top tier of the women's division. And I don't know that she's going to shake that immediately. But listen, I mean, when it comes to her promos, I mean, she looks like Meryl Streep next to some of these other ones out there. And I think the presentation with Michael Cole tonight was fine. I would have liked it a little bit more formally set up. I just think it was just so odd. It felt like they were spoon feeding the moment by having him up there, because it was just a format that is not used so frequently. It's only when they're trying to will someone who struggles that they put someone up there. But I do think she's you know, obviously captivating at this point because there's a lot of energy on her after the big win. And I'm curious, heading into SummerSlam, you know, what is this match with Rousey going to be like? I kind of liked Ronda versus Natalya as a program, even though it didn't have nearly the, I wouldn't say the intrigue nor the star power of some of Ronda's other feuds. I did think it went a long way of establishing a different kind of opponent for Ronda, somewhat the more typical WWE women's division wrestlers, and introducing that as a bit of a new era for Ronda that's going to have to enter. And this is a continuation of that. Liv is not a new face to WWE fans, but she is a familiar face and a comfortable face and one worth being excited for. And I think the storyline isn't going to be so much the evolution of Liv as much as it's going to be an evolution of Ronda in a heel capacity. And I think that's where we're going.
All right, Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I could see Rousey turning heel, like maybe at SummerSlam, like maybe she loses by roll-up and then she snaps and goes crazy on Liv and they continue the program into the next pay-per-view. I could see something like that happening. And I honestly thought Rousey was going to turn heel tonight.
Yeah, well, the key for Liv to get to the next level is to push her believably and not over push her where there's like a rejection or, you know, like, oh, she's not as good as her push. But you also don't want to go the other direction and have every win of hers be a fluke. You want to protect Ronda because she's, you know, your top paid female talent, one of the top paid people on the roster. And they're heavily invested in her and she's valuable to Fox and NBC executives as a crossover star who has prestige to the program. She's obviously better as a heel, but no matter what you do, you don't want to make it Liv's title reign just seem like one fluke after another. Cause I don't even think Liv fans will, I mean, they'll be happy she's getting a push, but you don't want it to seem like not that she's a charity case, but that she's being the booking is disrespecting her. And I think that's a narrow lane for them to drive to book her in and not over push her, but not make it seem like she's just a fluke and isn't competitive, but part of that is performing in the ring well when given the opportunity. And yeah, I wouldn't rule out a Ronda turn, but I'm not seeing clear signs that they're going the other direction either. I don't think they necessarily would have had her just defeat Natalya the way that she did in just sort of a babyface way. Hey, I shut this loudmouth up and I did so decisively and moved on. So I'm not seeing enough signals there to feel confident that that's where they're going, even though whether Ronda likes it or not, she's, you know, best cast as a heel at WWE.
Yeah, you're right, Wade. Give Liv some wins. I think she needs some wins. Like next week she's facing Natty. Have her pin Natty, you know, with her finisher and have her beat somebody the next week. But then at SummerSlam, I don't know, like the roll-up victory on Rousey is like, I think the only believable way for fans to believe that Liv can beat Rousey. I know you guys were talking about on the flagship about that doesn't really matter as much anymore to a lot of fans. I kind of agree with that. But, I mean, how do you guys feel about, like, if Liv beat Rousey with her finisher and pinned her? Like, would that be believable enough to you guys? Or, like, you think that would be ridiculous? What do you guys think on that?
Nick, is that in the realm of overpushing Liv to a point where it seems like they're pushing her too hard and there'd be some pushback, or would that be a statement win that is almost needed to get her credibility up to being a more consistent long-term top-tier competitor?
Well, I don't think it's going to reach pushback territory. I think it would be so damaging to Ronda. You know, at this point, you have to remember, if you were to ask us all the morning of WrestleMania this year, by this point, how many pins would Ronda Rousey be, you know, the recipient of losses from? We would all still be saying zero at this point. And now we're at two. And I don't think a clean loss to Liv Morgan should be in the cards. I think that there's a difference there. You can simultaneously push her with respect. And I wouldn't even say necessarily fluke wins, but you can give out of matches. You don't put her in this scenario too much. But with a Ronda Rousey, where you might have to come up with some crappy, you know, finish that doesn't lead to anyone getting a loss, that's a possibility. you know, I don't know how long Liv Morgan's going to maintain the championship, but you do still have to have an eye on Ronda as someone worth protecting, because while there might be a temptation there to really, you know, go all in, which I actually don't think WWE will do with Liv and give her just, you know, an avalanche of victories, Ronda still should be have a level, despite coming down to a little bit more of a normal presentation for her, she still does need to feel special for in special moments. And if we're heading to a Ronda versus Becky moment, you know, you still need her to be the Ronda Rousey, not Ronda Rousey, who also lost to Liv Morgan. So the long game of WWE booking for Ronda Rousey cannot lead her to losing cleanly to Liv Morgan.
All right. What was I going to say? Oh, anyway, go ahead, Mike. Anything else that you want to add before we move on?
Yeah, I think you're right, Nick. I mean, if Liv does beat Rousey, I think it's some kind of weird ending, or it's by roll up. And like I said, then Rousey snaps, you know, yeah, which I'm fine with that. And then they continue on with their program. And also, like you said, Nick, I think that Liv is, you know, she's very likable because, like I said this before, like she comes off as, like you said, very genuine, likable, very nice. And just like your average person, I said once that I could, you know, I compared her to Daniel Bryan. She just comes off as, you know, just like your average person, and you just want to root mm-hmm. for her. And I think she's very talented in the ring. I think some people underrate her in the ring. You know, I think if you give her like 10 minutes with someone, I think she performs very well. You know, like when
but
you
Nick, what is,
compare
what is,
her ring.
Nick, what is her track record? You can say her personality has some similarities to Daniel Bryan, but Bryan Danielson worked the indie scene and international, and it was just renowned as one of the best workers of his generation for years and years and years before he then won fans over with the Summer of Bryan against the Shield teaming with Kane. And it was that in-ring work and connecting with the crowd and telling a story and great comebacks and great selling and great body language. And Liv is not in his league at all. Oh, but
yeah.
But is she enough in the league of today's standard WWE range of in-ring talent that it's good enough if that other thing is there that Mike is pointing up?
Well, I think she can be compared to Daniel Bryan without comparing her to his story. And I think that, you know, it's the intangibles. It's the feeling of the person from your hometown who made it type thing, or just that you just are is just on the cusp of making it, and hopefully you as a supporter, you can will that person to finally have that moment. She carries with her that energy, which Daniel Bryan always did. You know, Wade, it's different. The path that Daniel Bryan, for example, went on, yes, there was a lot more depth there. There was a lot more twists and turns and peaks and valleys and various different stops along the way, whereas hers feels very singularly focused in WWE. But the thing that you have to remember is, the fans have long memories, especially as it pertains to, you know, this evolving women's evolution. And you've seen women over the years, you know, that you've liked but have been the recipient of seemingly unfair presentations because of how shallow the depth of the roster is. So you like this woman, but you've watched her over the years take, you know, quick losses left and right, not really being pushed, you know, always just, you know, just sometimes thinking you got an opportunity and then not really. You know, that builds the will of the fans when you can actually see this person finally get that moment to say, like, hey, we know that this person's been through a lot. Like, we can imagine that how crappy it feels for this person to have seen all these other individuals reach heights that they've never had the opportunity to. That is something people inherently connect to, because that's something we all feel every day, no matter what career we're a part of or, you know, what path in life that we're on, the feeling of the underdog finally coming through. And it only helps when the underdog is really likable and is really someone who the emotions on their face, you know, translate so much that you know that the actual person behind the character really feels that way. You know, listen, I didn't love the fact that it seemed like she was obviously crying coming out at Money in the Bank. I feel like that did give a lot away, and I think that that's something that, you know, I just don't like. I don't like think that that was entirely great. But I do think that there is something that, you know, you can't write, you can't script, and quite frankly, you can't act. And that's the thing that people connect to with her. And the wrestling, I think she's fine. I mean, I don't get excited when I see her come out. I do like to see her when she comes out. That's where I'm at with it. A little nuance difference. she's fine, and I enjoy seeing her, and that sometimes is just good enough.
Mike, I want to keep the show rolling here, but do you have any other topic that you wanted to bring up before we move on?
Yeah, I guess real quick on Reigns and Lesnar.
Yeah.
I liked Reigns' promo, and I liked how Heyman, you know, was concerned, and he was, like, trying to fire up Reigns to beat Lesnar and just go crazy and go insane and all that. So between that and, like you guys were saying, about Austin Theory maybe cashing in, it's enough to get me excited about the match. Plus, they always put on good matches, these two. I know some people don't like their matches because, you know, it's a lot of spears, and some people say the same moves are being done, but they have very physical matches. You know, I enjoy the physicality between those two. I mean, their match at WrestleMania was underwhelming because it didn't live up to the hype. You know, they were trying to say it was the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, and it just ended like flat, a spear out of nowhere, and that was it. But the match was still good. I enjoyed it. And I think this one will be better. Yeah, I think this one will be, you know, there'll be a lot of violent action, and it'll be good. You know, and
yeah,
I'm not really somebody that gets tired of rematches if it's a rivalry on a pay-per-view. I just don't like the rematches on TV every week. You know, those filler matches that, you know, the 50-50 book, and that's what I don't like.
Right.
But rivalries, like, for a pay-per-view, if there's that story, I have a lot of patience for that, and I can handle rematches. I don't mind, like, a three-match series and all that.
Nick, what can they do match-wise to make this match at SummerSlam different and not feel like, well, it's on Peacock and Lesnar showed up for his payday and they kind of did a slight variation of what they normally do and they figured that's good enough and it's all about the post-match angle or lack thereof or whatever. Like, what is there a story that you could imagine them telling that would be different, or a demeanor or a way the match is presented and played out that would make you go, all right, they made good on this?
Well, I think, you know, last man standing matches, Wade, are my least favorite gimmick match in all of wrestling. I think that they go often too long. There is too many pauses, and it just, you know, it takes forever, it feels like, to keep the momentum going. And it just isn't one that speaks to me. There have been great ones in the past. My favorite is Triple H versus Chris Jericho at Fully Loaded 2000. I mean, but those are two very different wrestlers, right, than Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. However, I do think that the format of this match will help, and I think it'll make the match, quite frankly, longer, which I think is in many ways what the biggest problem with the WrestleMania match was. You know, it was hard-hitting. It felt like you got all the big moves. You got all the signature things you would want to see out of Brock versus Roman. But it was just so boom, 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 over fast. And that's often how, you know, Brock Lesnar matches especially feel, and also a lot just in general main event WWE matches feel over the years. That was at one point a complete novelty. Now it seems like it's in the typical. I think that this will give that match a little bit more breathing room. I think it will bring out a different style inherently, given on how they're going to have to wrestle the match, by having the build up to the counts to see if the wrestlers don't respond to the count of 10. I think that actually will be good for this scenario. We're talking about bringing up the hype and also Roman's promo tonight. One of the concerns, for the first time in a very long time, I was suddenly very, very concerned that Roman was coming across too much like the babyface in this whole thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if you really saw a taste of that at SummerSlam, because here's the thing. Brock Lesnar was our guy worth rooting for. He was the new Cowboy Brock. He was someone worth being really excited for back at WrestleMania. And then he lost. And he lost definitively. So then, by the way, he's just not around. So there's not really a whole lot of momentum and a whole lot worth rooting for when it comes to his character heading into SummerSlam. So I do think that that's something to keep an eye on. Roman seemed to have a lot more cheers than every other week this week. And I thought that that was very prevalent.
He acknowledged it.
He sure did.
No play on words intended.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, what is something new they can do? They're not going to go out there doing Hurricanranas. Like, there's just nothing that's going to be all that different that they can do.
Yeah.
They command a level of prestige when they're out there. That will be inherently there. It's the getting through and whatever they have at the end. There needs to be something special at the end, though. This cannot just be another Roman win, and then an end to the show. And I, by the way, I don't think people expect it to be, and I just I can't imagine it being that way at the end. There will be something involving that briefcase at the end. And if it's not that, it's another major return of some kind, because I just think the situation calls for it.
All right, very good. Mike, appreciate the call very much. Let's now bring on Andrew, who's our on-site correspondent tonight in Fort Worth, Texas. Andrew, thanks so much for checking in with us after attending tonight's SmackDown.
How's it going, Wade? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, it's always great to talk with people for the first time who have been listening for a long time. Good to hear your voice, and thank you for being a long-time listener. Tell us what stood out on tonight's show. What are you going to remember about this experience 2, 3, 4 years from now when you look back, if anything at all?
So I have a great story for tonight. Is a week ago, I took my wife to our first WWE show in Abilene, and she liked it so much when she saw they're coming to Fort Worth. She said, you should get tickets. So we're about 2 shows in 2 weeks now. So that's what I'm going to remember, is that I convinced my wife to be a fan now.
Now, what did your wife like about the first experience? What was it about the WWE live show experience that made her want to go again?
I think the energy of the crowd, it's completely different. If you haven't been to a show since, I went a lot as a kid in the Attitude Era, and those were a little bit rougher crowds. And I'd say it's more family-friendly right now, to say the least. The live experience is totally different than the same thing on TV. I'm going to try to catch tonight's show tomorrow on Hulu to see if it's, leaving the show, it felt like it was a good show. I don't know if it came off that way on TV.
It was a good show. It was a very good show. I thought it was very, very watchable. Andrew, by the way, that's my brother's name. That's my favorite name of people. My question I would like to ask you is, talk to me about these cheers that I felt like were so obviously prevalent for Roman. Were you feeling like when you were in the room, what was the dynamic of the fans' reactions to him?
So it was definitely that's funny. It was a pro-Roman crowd by far. I'd say the T-shirts were sold out, the new ones for the Bloodline. It was when my wife went to get some concessions, and she wore my Head of the Table shirt. And some kids came up to her and wanted to do a fist bump, and she didn't know what was going on. Stuff like, it was the Bloodline crowd.
Oh. I don't know your wife, by the way, but I already enjoy her very much. I have a second question to you. And one thing I have to say, Andrew, that has always stood out to me at the live events when I've been there and I've seen Ronda, is that she always, and I admittedly this was pre-pandemic, had always still, regardless of the booking, regardless of who her opponent, always carried with her in person a real set, an aura, if you would, of importance. Does that still exist? Did you feel that way when she came out, that it still feel of a person of importance?
I was excited to see her. I don't think it was advertised that she was going to be on, but I definitely thought to myself, wow, this isn't the same as when she did the WrestleMania in New York, the vibe that was kind of around a couple years ago. I think when the Bloodline came out, everybody stood up. I don't know if it's because it's later in the show, but people didn't quite bother to stand up and get the cameras out as much. It just wasn't the same.
Yep.
Andrew, tell us about any down period in the show, because I'm curious about the house show experience versus the TV show experience, and if it felt different for you in terms of the commercial breaks and the starts and stops, the long ring entrances, and that kind of thing. What did you and what did your wife notice as far as that went, or did it not seem to stand out much?
So yeah, absolutely. So it was fun. I've been to a lot of shows. I knew what to expect for the commercial breaks. I didn't cue my wife in on what was going on. So the show in Abilene, we were walking to the car. I said, so what did you like? So, well, that show was nonstop action. You know, the matches were long. They all had satisfying conclusions. The TV show, obviously, if you get the pyro and the bells and whistles. One thing I wanted to ask you, on TV, what was going on with Lacey Evans? Was her entrance on TV three times?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So yep. They were playing that up, yeah.
It wasn't apparent, because in Abilene, she was, because my wife was a good guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And that obviously changed. Sure exactly what was going on with that. At first, it just seemed like it was a miscue.
Yeah, I can imagine if you're in the building, you think, oh, do they have her come out too soon or what? But, yeah, Nick, that was a deliberate and decisive heel turn, I guess. We now know what role she's going to have. It feels like there's been starts and stops and changes in direction. Or do you think this was sort of the master plan all along, Nick?
Oh, there was no master plan to this. But also, I feel like there's been, you know, plenty of instances along the way where it was, okay, now this was a definitive heel turn. Like when she was told, everyone was told to stand up and pay
yes.
homage to her. Then it's, oh, okay, now we have a definitive face turn. And now we're back to this. This is my least favorite character in all of WWE. And also the one where I feel like if you, you know, were to put a gun to your head and say, like, in a year from now, where is this character going to be on TV? You can't really see a spot for her. I just don't see that this being a strength of any of the WWE performers in at all. I can't imagine this being a successful run for Lacey Evans. There's nothing likable about watching that whole segment from at home sitting there. Andrew, when you ask what it was like on TV, it was just like the longest segment. I was sitting there going, I literally can't believe this is still happening. And that was just for the in-ring promo, let alone all the time that was filled with those entrances. You know, it seems, to be frank with you, pointless, because it still feels way beneath, you know, the top tier of what the women's division is presented at.
How did the crowd react? Yeah.
To use the lingo, it drew a lot of heat. There was, yeah. you know, a chorus of boos. And it felt like in the live crowd, it accomplished what you would want. It was, and it might be, you know, the type of crowd Dallas is too.
Well, this reminds me a bit of the Honky Tonk Man scenario where, you know, you think, or even New Day initially, where it's like you think the crowd's going to react a certain way and they don't. And how do you adjust? What do you do? And it just feels like they've gone back and forth on it. I'm with you, Nick. This does not come across as a master plan to land in this place. And I'm not as down on the act as you or the segment tonight as you are, but it does come across as if, boy, that heavy-handed week after week video could go two different directions with fans. And I think they see it as overbearing. And frankly, I think they have some memory of her past heelish character and aren't, you know, forgiving her or buying that she's anything but that character that she was most prominently presented as prior. So I think Lacey as a heel works for me. And if Liv is getting a push right now, in part because they decided to go heel with Lacey and they needed to elevate somebody on the babyface side, you know, that might work out. That might work out pretty well, actually.
Well, wait, they don't also need to even have long memories of that, because when she comes out, there's a CGI character of that previous iteration of her that greets you. So it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Andrew, and Nick, I want to save your thoughts on this when we don't have Andrew on the phone. So abstain mm-hmm. for now. This is a hook for later. But Andrew, how did the crowd react to Maximum Male Models?
So that was a good one. And that's why I really, like, my wife's becoming the star of this show. I didn't cue her in as to what was going to – what's going on? Yeah. Part of the fun of the show is some of the stars of WWE are the ring crew and the setup. If when you're there live, to see them get out all that tennis stuff during the commercial, and it's like watching the Wimbledon with the ball boys. And it's like, what is going on? And I had alluded to earlier, the crowds were a little rougher in the attitude. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
This was the worst segment in terms of bad behavior in the crowd. I get the feeling
was it
that's
good
what
kind
they're
of,
trying to elicit.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, is it getting the reaction you think it deserves, or was the crowd sort of like, get this off of my wrestling show?
It drew heat. I don't know if it's the good kind, and it didn't get inappropriate per se, but I can't see it going any different than, say, the Spirit Squad. It has that vibe of people are going to be happy when someone comes and beats them up, and then where do you go with it? But if it gets those guys on TV and doing paid and stuff where, you know, I'm looking at the business a lot different than growing up now. So I see the good in it, too.
Andrew, I don't want to keep you too much longer, and I don't want to keep our callers on hold too much longer either, but I want to give Nick a chance to ask another question, but I'm going to come up with one first here, which is, what was the reception for Liv Morgan, and how did it compare to Ronda Rousey's? Did you get a sense of who the crowd was more into just organically or naturally when they came out tonight?
Sure, I'd say they were more for Liv Morgan. My personal feeling was it was probably because it's new and exciting, which is it's a good thing, but it wasn't overwhelming. You know what? It was adequate and new and exciting, and let's see where it goes. But it wasn't. You didn't get that feeling. People weren't coming to the arena to see her.
Who got the biggest pops of the night?
Oh, definitely Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
The opening segment, and then the dark match. It was good. Bobby Lashley is on a roll, and he was really over with the Dallas crowd.
Oh, wow. Who do you wrestle in the dark match? Go ahead and tell us about that.
Oh, he did Theory. So after, I'm assuming when the show went off the air with the ropes being cut.
Yes.
Then they quickly came up and reset up the ring, and they had a pretty, say, almost a 10-minute match. It was pretty good. Lashley won with a roll-up. I think it's called the A-Town Down, or I don't know what he's calling. He fell out of the move and rolled him up, and then after the match they did the Hurt Lock and, you know, sent the crowd home happy.
Cool. Nick, do you have another question for Andrew?
Yeah, Andrew, it seemed that there was a different entrance for Gunther tonight. You know, first of all, what did you and your wife think of his presentation today, and what kind of energy does he command from the crowd?
Great question. I'm so glad you asked. So,
good job, Nick.
Well, we fell in love with Gunther in Abilene. He stole the show, and we, as a long time fan, I mean, he reminds me of the stuff I was growing up with in the 80s, Wade.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird dichotomy. It doesn't quite fit the current product in one way, but I love him.
And
the song is so annoying, I can't get it out of my head.
Andrew, you cut out for a little bit there. So are you saying his new song is so annoying? Is that what you're saying?
It's so annoying. Yeah, it's annoying, but in a good way.
Okay. All right.
We're big Gunther fans.
Well, it sounds like you guys had a good night, and I appreciate the thoughts very much.
Andrew, is there anything else you want to share? Yeah, before you hang it, just is there anything else you want to share from the experience tonight? Anything we didn't ask you about that you think is noteworthy? You know, Shanky or Shinsuke or something? And in fact, I should ask, too, was there anything you got there in time to see before SmackDown went on the air?
Sure. There was Raquel Gonzalez and Zaya Lee, which was a repeat from the Abilene show. Serviceable match. It seems like they're getting ready for maybe something bigger, hopefully. I would say just support your shows. We would love it if they'd come back to Abilene, but, I mean, you follow the business. It would probably depend on how the ticket sales went, Wade.
Yeah.
So support your, if you haven't gone in a long time, at least give it another chance.
Andrew, how was the attendance tonight? Was the arena looking pretty full?
I thought it was pretty full. Some of the upper seats were patchy, but overall, I'd say 80 to 85%.
Wow, good,
great. Well, Andrew, thank you for listening all this time, and it was great to finally be able to talk with you. Hopefully, we can do this again.
All right, roll tide.
Thanks. Take care. All right, let's keep rolling through calls. You can give us a call, by the way. Our number is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. That is 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Get to some of our callers who've been on hold for a while. We'll start with, go back to Justin in Charlotte on the phone lines. Justin, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What stood on SmackDown for you tonight?
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Wade. How you doing, Nick? You guys were talking about Roman earlier and things like that, and it feels like they're setting up brass at SummerSlam. We said there's not a cash in Roman Reigns. Seems like they're setting up him and McIntyre. And the way McIntyre feels compared to Roman when he came out tonight, it just, I mean, everybody has an issue with this Brock and Roman match, but I have more of an issue the idea of Drew McIntyre possibly beating Reigns, considering they're going to be in his home country or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what they can do to heat up Drew. I don't know what you guys think they can do, but I'm not feeling that feud. I know it's a little ways out, but just the idea that Drew versus Roman, that just doesn't seem like a main event caliber match. I mean, what you guys think about that?
Well, it's not a primary event, and, you know, they obviously want to have the European flavor of him being in that match. Nick, what do you think? It wasn't the most prestigious way for Drew apparently to earn his way into the match, unless that didn't count tonight because Sheamus couldn't work, and they're going to delay that till another week.
Yeah, well, I got the impression it didn't count. Yeah. I totally agree with you, Justin. I have zero interest in this match, which is just so amazing about the story, what that tells about Drew McIntyre over the past couple of years. But, oh, goodness, no, I don't feel as though there is a whole lot of folks who would be willing for him to have this match or anything to be excited about involving it. So, yeah, I just thought the ending as a duplication of, you know, the WrestleMania moment with him with the sword, and just all things considered, I mean, how could you not watch that last segment and not be rooting for Butch? I mean, I just don't understand it. And that's not a great place for Drew to be. I mean, he truly, you know, Wade, I have for years always, you know, equated Drew McIntyre to Kevin Nash, famously from 1995, the Diesel character. But he's actually becoming more and more like Lex Luger in WWF, which was where after he burned out fast, when he didn't, like, once his initial big push failed, then he was just kind of just the also-ran, all-American character that was in tag team matches with the British Bulldog and doing not a whole lot, and just felt stale and way past his prime. And that's what Drew McIntyre feels to me.
Yeah. All right. Justin, back to you. Anything else, Justin?
Yeah. So another thing, you know, keeping with the thing about the whole main event thing, I feel like Austin Theory really has a chance to climb that ladder as far as the main eventer, but I know he didn't use it tonight, but I just think that's selfie gimmick. You just got to get rid of it. I just think that's really holds him back from getting to that next level. It's just that gimmick. It just doesn't feel main event. And let's say they pull the trigger at SummerSlam. It's just, I think some people are against them for different reasons, but every time I see him with that cell phone, I just think, like, this is not a main event gimmick. What do you guys think that they can do to get him there? Or do you think it's just not the time? Maybe 3 or 4 months down the road, they should revisit the idea of pushing him that high.
Interesting. Nick, is the selfie gimmick a timely hook that gives him something to do that's obnoxious, and it at least is help It's helping build the foundation of what might eventually be a heel act. Is it something that sticks with him? Would you try to write it out sooner because Justin's perception is yours and you think others, which is, yeah, this phone thing, it just feels kind of gimmicky and it's holding him back. Where are you on that?
I think it's fine for what it is right now. I don't think he should or will shed a whole lot of what the current character is prior to cashing in. I think once he's a main eventer, and I do think that day is going to be coming. I think he is a star. He looks like a star. He feels like a star. Everything about him feels quite a bit more polished, I think, than some of his contemporaries. I think at that point you are naturally going to see something like this shed away from him because there is something of the moment about the selfie thing. Like, listen, we've had selfies have been a prevalent part of our culture for over a decade at this point, from the Chainsmokers song that came out all those years ago. Like, I mean, everyone knows what a selfie is, but it also does put a bit of a timestamp on the whole thing. So I think that is something as he becomes more of a refined main event character that would go. It's funny, you know, my eyes adjust because I just think he looks the part in such a good way right now as being a future real deal main eventer. I thought his jog around the ring was kind of reductive, and I think it should be more of a threat on his name and take away some of the goofiness that surrounds him. It's almost like if he was treated himself with a little bit more seriousness and then did the selfie thing, that would kind of stand out in like a really villainous way. But there was something there's something a little too Miz-like about him right now that I think needs to be shifted up to give him his own definitive character, because I'm not sure that's fully fleshed out just yet.
I think what he has working in his favor is he's 24, and there's just time for him to grow up in front of our very eyes. And I think fans will be forgiving of what he does now because he's just a kid. He's just a rookie. He's enamored with the Mr. McMahon character, making him the new chosen one. And he's probably going to visibly grow up in terms of just looking like a 30-year-old when he turns 30, and people will be on a journey with him. And so, you know, the selfie might still be around as sort of this like wink nod to the audience, annoy the heel when you take a selfie with him afterwards if he's eventually a babyface, or it just gets dropped. It's something that occurred early on, and I don't think it's devastating in any way. I think it's you know, it's a way to get heat now, and it's not. I don't think it's going to be something that makes or breaks him, but it does give him something. Now that's sort of the hook of what he does. And fortunately, it fits his character, that he would be somebody who would, to his own detriment, taunt people who he beats with a selfie and gloat. And it plays into the annoyance of people who are, you know, in real life, always trying to position you for a selfie. Of course, I do that sometimes too. But you know what I mean? Like there's aspects of that where people relate to it and go, oh God, not another selfie or not somebody else getting in my way of something who are trying to set up a selfie. So I think it works. I don't have a big problem with it, Justin.
Wait, what was that you do with people with a selfie?
I don't know. I sometimes gather people for selfies. I don't know what you think I said.
Oh, I mean, something about you gathering for a selfie, it just seems like a dog on its hind legs. I don't know why. It just seems awkward to me.
Well, I mean, people have different perceptions of me. Sometimes accurate, sometimes not. All right, Justin, back to you. Anything else you want to add? Otherwise, we can move on to our next caller.
This lot of Randy Orton, a lot of John Cena comparisons, and look, I get it, he's not them, but, you know, you did have a Legend Killer gimmick, you had Dr. Thugonomics gimmick. I just feel maybe the level of aggression, maybe, you know, a mean streak, maybe something like that could get him there. And I respect you guys' opinion about theory, but I just feel like Nick kind of mentioned, there needs to be some things shaved off of there. And maybe it's just up to his aggression level a little bit, because the cash in right now, even 3 weeks out with that gimmick, I don't see it being as successful as WWE would like for it to be. I think, you know, maybe it doesn't happen because it does feel like they're setting up the Drew McIntyre program, so maybe he's going to try to cash in, not able to, or maybe this is a few months down the road, but that's pretty much it. I still don't know how he's still coming out going after the women's title after she lost Sunday, Saturday, and lost on Monday. I don't get that, but, you know. That's
all right, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Thanks for calling. Nick, what do you think about Natalya and how she was used tonight? Justin just brought that up. Having her, you know, be competitive on the PLE and then a couple days later just get squashed. Is that a way to get, you know, an extra something out of a match you built up to fill some TV time and really establish, yeah, Ronda lost, but let's give her a boost with a clean win over Natalya and Natalya goes back to where she was? Or does it feel like they lost something that they built up with Natalya?
No, I think it was fine for me. You know, it didn't seem completely out of the realm of like past WWE bookings of similar type feuds. But I think even in Natalya losing definitively, there was still respect on her. But being on a televised match with Ronda Rousey, I think it's still higher than she has been for 90% of her career. So I think ultimately there does seem to be a more of an importance on Natalya's name right now. She does carry with her, you know, some rightfully earned veteran appeal in there. And I think, like I said, I really liked her as a counterpoint to Ronda. I think that they have a good chemistry. I think they had a good in-ring chemistry, too. So I thought she was just fine.
All right, very good. We'll keep going through calls here. Oh, Rob just dropped off. We're going to go to Rob. Rob, call back if you want, if you're still listening. So we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee next. Sean, you are up. Welcome, Sean.
Oh, Wade, it's always good to talk to you. It's always a pleasure. Nick, I'm still a member of the Knicks Club, man. I'm still a member, dude. I love it.
For
I
life.
I love you, man. I love your show. Yes, yes. I love your show, man. Like I said, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. Don't miss it. Even if you, like I said, on Twitter, I think at some point, even if you disagree with them, you got to love them because it's just so much fun and it's so energetic, and I love that. So, Wade, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good. Good, thanks.
Awesome. I wanted to talk real quick because it came up here a minute ago about Drew. I'm with you guys as far as, yes, Drew has gotten a little stale. But to me, the reason why he's gotten stale is because he's got to get rid of that freaking sword, man. Like, if they could just get rid of the sword and get rid of some of the little kind of dumb, stale stuff they're doing with him, I really like – I mean, the fans are still behind him, which I like. I'm still behind him. I think he tells great stories in the ring. He's awesome in the ring. I mean, him and Roman, I think they can really build that up. Do I think Drew should win? No, I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. I don't think Drew should win the match. But I think they can do a really good build to the match because I just think, you know, Drew talking about what the title means to him, and I think he could do that. I think he could get that stuff across. And I don't know. I think they can do something with him. Nick, I know you think I'm crazy, but I know you
don't
like as much as I do. And that's the thing. Like, I think just there's little things they can do to get him to where because the fans want to get behind him, and I think if you tell a good story, I think they could do that. So what do you think about that?
Well, I don't think you're crazy. Actually, I get exactly what you're saying. I think you're dead on. And by the way, Sean, I think you're one of the most, you know, thoughtful of all of the folks that not only just call in on PW Torch but are part of PW Torch. I think you're dead on almost all your observations. I think the sword is a major part of the problem. You know, there are some people when they have those, you know, gimmick things that could turn into toys and all that stuff that, you know, become real net positive and gains for them. This is not it though. This was a defining down of him in a very big way. You know, there was the story of Drew McIntyre is interesting, and it's probably one for us to dive into more thoroughly at a later date than this type of call. But, you know, mm-hmm. He is someone that at its heart that, you know, isn't too dissimilar to what we were talking about Liv Morgan earlier, of someone who was very likable and someone worth rooting for. And then when they finally reached the opportunity, there was this moment of elation, like, wow, the guy finally got his opportunity that he's earned for so long. And then something went wrong there, and it was almost like there was a self-consciousness of, oh gosh, this wrestler of ours was on top for too long, and now we have to like rein Drew in and kind of bring it back so he doesn't feel so jammed down everyone's throats. But in doing that, they kept him down too long without a significant storyline. Sure, he was in programs with Baron Corbin and Sheamus, but there was nothing of substance there. There's nothing new we've learned about Drew McIntyre. But what you're saying, Sean, is true. If he is going to be the presumed challenger for Clash at the Castle, this is an opportunity for him to have sit down, you know, interviews to define what does it mean for him to be going for the championship in his home country, in his hometown, and really reset the narrative there. It's time to strip back the clownery of the sword and really stop leaning in so much to the obvious of him with the brawling brutes and get him back in there to have something more of substantive and more story attached to him. It's possible. You're absolutely right. He's one of the very, very best on the entire roster. But they have to also understand how he's presented now. When we talk about the likable characteristics that some wrestlers have, this is in the complete opposite. This is very unlikable. And there's not a whole lot worth rooting for with the person who walks around like they're the star quarterback when they're not. That is not a character worth rooting for.
Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, wait. Yeah, well, wait, I wanted to ask you, like, do you think I'm crazy for feeling that way? Like, what do you think about – I know you don't – what do you think about Drew in general? Like, do you think they can build him back up, even though Drew should not win? Do you think they can build him up for a match like that at Clash at the Castle? Like, is that – do you think that's a fair assessment for me?
I don't think Clash at the Castle is an event worth being the inspiration point or creating a sense of urgency to – reframe Drew. I think they can do it at any time, and I think they ought to, but I think there'll be a time where there's a reason for him to shift into a new mode, and I think if you try to do something different with him for an event that frankly isn't going to matter a ton in the sort of ongoing storyline and in canon of WWE, at least I don't think it will, I think that's a waste. That's a waste. Almost then we'll feel like they're not sure what to do with Drew when they do something that they really want to stick and matter. I think keep Drew the way he is now until you're confident that a change will make a big difference. That could be a heel turn. It could be dropping the sword. It could be some angle that leads to him taking on having a new look and a new persona. I think having a new look might be symbolically a good thing for him, whether it's the hair or the ring gear. But,
both,
you know,
please.
Yeah. Yes. But to me, I'm kind of thinking for Drew to have a spark. Like right now, there's more money sometime in the next couple years in Drew McIntyre as a heel against Roman Reigns as a face. That's where the money is in that matchup. And I don't, you know, I don't know that there's a lot you can do to the Drew babyface character that's going to create a spark right now. And that's even worth changing. And I think you're actually building up towards a heel turn better by having him be this character until that moment comes.
Yeah, and that's fair. Because it's just unfortunate. Because, again, I know it's, you know, when COVID hit, it was just a bad time for him. And that was really unfortunate because he had fans loved him and they really adored him. And in WrestleMania at the Performance Center, when he was, like, kissing that belt and, like, telling people, I love you, thank you. There was something there. And it just was unfortunate that that's when that happened. But anyway. Going off that, I wanted to say again, I know I've said it, and Wade, I know you're with me, and Nick, I think you're even with me at this point. New Day, get off, like, Xavier and Kofi, like, just get off my screen. Like, the stuff they're giving them is just so bad. It's just awful. It's I don't even know what word to use. Am I, like, crazy? Like, I wish they would. I know New Day was so good for so long, and I respect how long they've tried to take it because of the merchandise. And because the fans were truly behind it for a long period of time, but it's over. They've got to do something different. Or am I crazy?
No, I wanted to tip the Viking Raiders after that.
Yes.
No, you're not crazy. You know, this is a act that, you know, that has just been taken for granted as being something that can just exist and probably allowed the actual performers themselves to delve into their worst characteristics that they don't even realize about themselves, and their worst indulgences as characters to then be put on TV. You know, again, you take it out of the context of what you know in history wise that, oh, these are baby faces and whatnot. If this is the first time you're watching them, you think they're obnoxious and not for the right reasons. You know, this is, we feel so far removed from when the New Day was viable for having, be, you know, worth your cheers. And I agree with you. I think at this point I joke about it, but it was worth rooting for the Viking Raiders because they felt new. They felt like a newer presentation. They had momentum. That's worth cheering for. The New Day as a stale act. Nope, not today.
Yeah, I don't want to rip on New Day, but I'm not amused. I'm not entertained, and I would change them before I change Drew. Although, really, I don't know that there's a lot you're going to get out of changing them. I think they're going to keep doing what they're doing as long as they're selling merch and having good matches. But my God, you know, thick AF, yay Xavier, and yeah, just anyway. Go ahead, Sean.
Just two more quick things. The first was, I actually wanted to hear what you guys thought, because it wasn't like a ton, but like, again, with Baron Corbin, Happy Corbin, you know, whatever, it's Happy Corbin right now, but I like what he does. I mean, he puts everything into what he's doing, and I guess a guilty pleasure, as the Maximum Male Models would say, to titillate your guilty pleasures, but he's like a guilty pleasure of mine, and I thought he was pretty good on commentary, you know, for what he did. Like, what did you guys think of him on there? Because I actually enjoyed him on there. I thought he was annoying, which, again, he's supposed to be annoying, and I thought it was pretty good. What'd you think?
I didn't anticipate him just mocking, doing a mocking impersonation of Pat McAfee, and I thought it was entertaining, and I'm kind of with Sean. I think the goal is to be obnoxious. And I think he did so at the expense, but in a, you know, stepping back playful way. It didn't seem mean-spirited, and so it was entertaining. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I think the mocking moment of Pat McAfee for the entrance of Shinsuke Nakamura was all that mattered, because how many times have people been out for commentary and there's nothing memorable of it other than maybe how bad they did? We actually got something worth adding into a video package for SummerSlam. It's definitely memorable. Listen, I didn't feel like he was killing it on the mic, but I thought that moment alone and just the energy that he brought as a continuation to the storyline worked for me.
Now, did I hear right? Pat McAfee can't be with us because of what Happy Corbin did to him 6 days ago.
Yeah.
As soon as Money in the Bank went off the air. But he's out golfing. And they said he was
out golfing. You did hear that. I wasn't sure if that was like supposed to be sarcastic or something, but I don't know.
Well, then I think Corbin was trying to cover it by going, but he's in 64th place. But it's like, I guess he must be at some charity golf tournament or something. I don't know. I haven't researched this. But if he can golf, but he can't fly to Fort Worth and do color commentary, that kind of ruins the whole story. So I just say don't introduce the real life golfing, if that was real life and intended to be taken that way, into the canon of their little SmackDown story.
So he is indeed golfing, as Instagram now is showing me.
Yeah. So just, you don't need to tell us about that. You just
wait. I've never heard you so fired up about anything in my whole life. Like that's it of everything. That was the moment. Okay.
I'm just getting started.
Okay.
Anyway, Sean, what else we got for us? Anything?
Yeah, the last thing was, just getting fired up on New Day again. Just getting fired up on that. He'll go off on that for a while. But no, Wade, number one, I hope you think what Nick said earlier. I hope you think the same way Nick does, because, man, that'd make me feel good inside. I really hope you do. But no, going back to Liv, and just talking about Liv, like, I'm glad Andrew was there to talk about the reaction, because when on TV, like, it did not feel like a great reaction for Liv. Like, it was okay. I mean, it was, you know, like, good reaction, but it wasn't like, oh, we're invested in Liv, what she's doing right now. We're super pumped. I mean, it was good, and I like what Liv's done on these last two promos. You know, they've been genuine, but I still think what Todd talked about on I don't know, I forget where he talked about it, if it was on the Fix the other day or on the Roundtable, but they should have just turned Ronda heel right then and there. I just, like, for Ronda to, like, get up after the way Liv cashed in, for her just to get up and shake her hand and give her the title, that's not Ronda. That Ronda wouldn't do that. That's just not her. They'll do something, you know, at SummerSlam most likely, and turn her heel, or if they do, you know, whatever. And Ronda will turn heel at some point, but I think they missed their opportunity to do it, and I didn't like that. So that's really basically all I had. But Nick, dude, always love talking to you, man. Wade, you guys are the best. Zach and Tyler did a great job today on the Fireside Chat. They always do a good job. I got to get in there and talk to them for a little bit. So I always appreciate what you guys do for the Torch, and I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Enjoy your weekend. I am nervous, Nick. I'm going to forget to ask. And so before we get to our next call, Maximum Male Models, what do you think of the gimmick so far? What do you think of what they did tonight with it?
I just uploaded my full body shot.
You what?
I just uploaded my full body shot for Maximum Male Models or whatever.
Oh.
.com. Wait, are you kidding me? You missed that joke? Are you kidding me? Like,
I was prepared for that one. I just didn't hear it. I don't know why, but I couldn't make out what you said.
So what did I – well, wait. I don't know what you thought of it. I quite enjoyed it. Now, here's why, okay? First of all, I think – listen, when you look at the characters of Mace and Mansoor, we weren't going anywhere so exciting with them. This
right.
was a segment that I found really – it's, if nothing else, memorable and honestly inoffensive and not disastrous. I liked it. I felt like it was – it's in its way a callback to, you know, other characters in wrestling's past, even as far back to when they, you know, brought in the narcissist Lex Luger in 93 with Bobby Heenan on the mic, you know, building him up and, you know, talking it through. I mean, it really
Chris
felt
Masters.
Back. Yeah, Chris Masters, you got it. Like the era of the supermodel and all of that. And so in many ways, I was surprised by how much time they gave to the catwalk kind of thing. It felt like a beat too long for each of them. But it was fine. And to be honest with you, the guys looked great out there. I thought it was fine. What I also really liked about it is I found it inoffensive, which, as I said earlier in the description, but like that's something that, you know, we have seen these things become offensive. We've seen them almost like encouraging the crowd to yell bad things at these segments. And while, yes, it leans into the quirk and, you know, the camp of it all, it still was something that I don't think this is going to be some long-range success, but I think for right now it's an interesting thing to try. And I thought Max Dupree as the character, I felt like it worked pretty well for him as being a memorable character for at least another week. And I think that that's more than you can get out of some characters in WWE these days. So honestly, I loved the music and – Wait, did you ever see the movie Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
Oh, yes. It's been a long time, yeah.
So the music that they were playing here, I don't know if you remember, at the end of that movie, you know, before all the, you know, chickens come home to roost on Christina Applegate's character, they have this, like, catwalk thing where they do this big fashion show for the company she's working with, and they played this blaring, like, you know, catwalk music. That's where I don't know why I went on this tangent, but that's what that reminded me of. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for the camp of the early 90s. That's really what I liked it.
Do you play tennis? Have you played tennis?
No, but I look good in tennis shorts.
as Dupree will be evaluating soon, I presume.
I had to be clothed in the pictures?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I guess they didn't specify that.
Yeah, you never know.
Yes. Nor did Vince McMahon know that was a rule. Yes, I did. I did. I could have stopped, but I didn't. It looked like Massé had never held a tennis racket before. Like, he had no, like, proper grip. It was like, it wasn't, like, you couldn't hit a ball with the way that he was holding it. It's just like, it just felt like he had, like, never encountered a tennis racket until he was told to walk out there with it. I got a kick out of that. I mean, it's not even fraudulent. It just plays into it. They're models, and they're pretending to be tennis players this week. So, you know, it actually works. I don't know if it was even intentional. It didn't seem like it was played up to be intentional. But, like, it didn't feel natural. But I'm with you. I think that this is a chance for – I know people are, like, all outraged. Like, you know, you were defending Butch right away. You know, hey, you know, this is WWE, and you know, Pete Dunne is not going to be pushed the way that – you know, he's not going to be pushed like the next Daniel Bryan, no matter what his talent level that he's shown to have in the ring. And this is, you know, what they do with people who have his strengths and his traits. And with Massé and Mansoor – they were going nowhere, and now they've got a gimmick. And Max Dupree can wrestle. I don't know if they'll have him wrestle, but this is what he was born to do. The first time I saw him stand in the ring and do his shtick, I was like, this is probably going to be, if he doesn't have, you know, a bad reputation or make mistakes, if he just plays his cards right, he's going to be standing in the middle of the ring on Raw and SmackDown doing some gimmick kind of like this, being a big mouth.
Right.
And it's not a upper card thing, but it's part of what WWE does. And it is deliberate, and it was, yeah, unoffensive. And if it felt to be too long, I think that's intentional. I mean, I think
I get that.
It's meant
yeah.
to be uncomfortable and you know, losing your patience with it. That's part of where the heat comes from. And I mean, it's not a main event gimmick, but...
No, but wait, it was better than Billy and Chuck. I really believe that. And
yeah.
Also, I got to say, I'm not trying to be funny when I say this. I give Messé a lot of credit. I felt like he went all in on his performance tonight. I felt like it was like it didn't seem an embarrassed performance.
Right.
It felt
that.
Like he was really like put his all into it. I didn't feel that way from Messé necessarily, but I thought that there was a real difference there. Like this guy was really trying to make it work in a way that he didn't necessarily, you didn't feel from him in Retribution. So that already is inspiring enough for one of them. So God mm-hmm. bless him. That's great.
Yep. All right. Back to our calls. We'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Ryan, thank you for calling. I assume you have three things for us. What's your first time?
My first question is on theory. Do you ever see him being managed by Paul Heyman with rumors that Roman could be leaving, you know, in a year or two? Like, could he be a Paul Heyman guy, in your opinion?
What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's totally possible. I think there's what I have proposed before, though, which I think people might think I'm crazy about, is I don't think it always needs to just be Paul Heyman, though, that has his – you know, the Paul Heyman guys. I think as a manager, MVP would be a real good complement to some of these other wrestlers. I think as he showed with Lashley before, that could be much more useful than that's happening with Omos right now. So, but for, you know, what you're proposing, yeah, I think that there's going to be a day, hopefully, where when the Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns act kind of expires, that Paul Heyman is still interested in sticking around, that, you know, it would be a good compliment to have him to be with Theory. I think Theory, though, I was very impressed by his promo tonight. And it's getting to the point where any addition to his act is really just for the visual and chemistry sense. I don't think he needs someone to speak for him.
Yeah, good point. I am looking forward to, and I think the day will come, where Heyman has a new wrestler that he's managing. And you know, or, you know, representing in whatever way they frame it. And I'm curious who that is. It's going to be up to Heyman to, you know, probably veto or embrace it. And I'm curious who that is. And it could be Theory, it could be Madcap Moss. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it might be Bron Breakker. It could be someone we've never heard of and seen yet because it's a few years down the line. But I do look forward to seeing Heyman in a new environment again. Because obviously he plays very differently off Roman than he did Brock, and you know every incarnation of Heyman over the decades, going back to the 80s, has had different vibes to it, including the old. I'd love to see a Dangerous Alliance reform. That'd be fun. Multiple
okay.
people. All right, Ryan, back to you.
Second question is on the Street Profits. They were talking a couple of weeks ago about them having some dissension. If they were to break up, do you think Angelo Dawkins would do okay by himself? Because it appears that Montez Ford might be the star of the two just by the way that they've booked them in the past.
Yeah, they've been talking up Dawkins. They've been giving him some spots. It seems like they're trying to prepare people for him not just being discarded when
yep.
the Street Profits break up. Nick, your thoughts?
No, I think you're right, Wade. You can almost feel that the ground being set for him in that capacity. I think you never really know, right? I mean, so many people get into who's the Shawn Michaels of the Rockers and who's the Marty Jannetty. I don't think it always has to be that way. And also, I don't know that they need to be compared to each other with whatever happens in the post-Street Profits parts of their career. I think Dawkins does have a certain upside to him too. And I think if they were to break them up now, I think I would see Montez Ford more closely stick to the character that he currently has. But I think there'd be more range with Dawkins to maybe move out into a different type of character. And I think that could work. But I think that there's room for both of them to succeed.
All right, Ryan, what else?
Another question I have is on this Pat McAfee-Baron Corbin feud. What do you know about their football history, what they were talking about? Like, I thought this was about being on the same team. I thought Baron was maybe talking about tackling hard during practice. Did any of this actually happen? Like, any details you got for us on this?
Nick, I'm so glad this is the week you're on. Fill us in.
What? No, wait. I don't play tennis. Is that what you were asking?
Ryan, I actually don't know the answer to that. As they were talking about it, I'm like, well, I got to look this up and see what there is to this. So, sorry, I can't help you on that. Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
I guess the only other question I have is on this Lacey Evans character. Do you think if this was the 80s that the fans wouldn't boo her? Because I think the audience has greatly changed since then, because I think we lost like a lot of the sort of like the hardcore military fans like UFC. So do you think she would have actually gotten cheered tonight instead of booed back in, say, like 1985 would be like the female version of Corporal Kirchner?
Nick, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think if that was the intent as a babyface for her to be leaned into the military components, sure. But this is leaned into too much of an ironic level. Like the intent is to be obnoxious about the emphasis on the patriotism. So I think if it was meant to be an all-in positive character, yeah, it would have been over in the 80s. But I think that's not the character that's being presented right now. So I don't know how that would have translated.
All right, Ryan, appreciate the call. Thanks. Thanks for holding.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Of course. Enjoy your weekend. All right, let's go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
So I wanted to talk about Liv Morgan and her and then I don't know if you noticed it, but they made it official on Twitter or Instagram that's going to be Ronda and Liv at SummerSlam for the championship. So they made that official,
yeah.
Bunch of all that stuff. So it's and with Liv, she's I really enjoy. I actually like her look tonight than on Monday. I don't know. It's like I like it when she looks like an adult instead of a kid because of on Monday and she was look like a child on Monday, and tonight she looked like more of an adult. So I don't know what made a difference there. If that's just something I just observed. And you know, Liv is really. She really fits on SmackDown. When she first came on SmackDown as a champion, she just fits on SmackDown. It's a good place for her to be on because it's not that many star power on SmackDown besides Ronda and Charlotte. But besides that, it's all new faces and Raquel and doing something with Lacey, who just turned heel and doing something, you know, and do something with these women besides the same faces every single time. As much as I love Becky, they focus on her a lot. They focus on Ronda a lot. They focus on Charlotte a lot. Focus on other women. They're there. They're not just props. Do something with them. And that's why people are not really believing in Liv too much, because for the longest time she's been an afterthought. In a lot of ways, she's kind of booked like Becky Lynch, and you know, earlier days of Becky's career when the focus was just about Charlotte and Sasha, and Becky was the afterthought. Kind of a little bit here with Liv Morgan. She hasn't been booked well at all, but recently she's been, since the year started, since Freedom with Becky, and until now with being in feuds with Rhea, and then her matches on pay-per-view, and then where she is now. So I just think they have a chance to make Liv special and interesting and more incredible, and not let this be a short title run, which I just feared they're going to do, which I think is a mistake. Because if they do that, they go back to Ronda and back to Charlotte. What are we doing here on SmackDown if they only rely on the same faces? So, Kate, what do you think about that, and how can they really make her reign really well and treat it with, you know, a longer reign than a few weeks?
Nick? What do you think?
Well, I think, Kyle, that's kind of what we were talking about earlier with regards to, I think you're absolutely right about what makes Liv connect so much with the audience is that feeling of we've been on the journey watching her not reach the success that others have. So I think that alone is what's drawing a lot of the connection to her. I think you're also right that it was the right time to bring her over to SmackDown to freshen up necessarily, especially to have someone viable against Ronda Rousey heading into SummerSlam. Although, as I say this, when we're talking about SummerSlam right now, this card just seems very, very anticlimactic, you know, all things considered. Now, it's like really striking me as we're talking it through on this show. You know, what's going to make her be viable moving forward? Honestly, I think it's a quality of match. I don't know that we suddenly want her to be booked like she's Andre the Giant. I don't think that suddenly a woman who's lost quite a bit over the years magically, you know, starts winning every single match. I find that a little
hard. Well, that's the problem then. So if so you don't want to be overly be booked like Becky Lynch and win every single match, but I don't also want her to be booked like she's going to lose every single time she does. So how can they do a medium average then there? Because she's going to have to, you're going to have her win to seem credible. Because if she just loses, we're like, oh, we all knew it. She just lost it. We all knew it. So what's the point of putting a title on her? So what's the even ground of that then? I just think you gotta have to make her win in order to make her seem credible, or I don't know. I guess that's the problem.
Well, here's the thing.
For years.
Well, Kyle, I don't think she needs to be wrestling every single week if she's the champion. I think that they need to find the right person for her to go up against and have her win definitively a program. I think that's different from suddenly having her in there pinning Raquel 1 week, then pinning Xia Li the next week. And, I mean, she can beat those wrestlers, no problem. Have her take them out one by one. But still, for her to have a longer program, just out of ease sake, just picking Natalya out again, to go through a program that goes a month with her and definitively beat her, that goes a long way. You know, to just suddenly feel like, okay, we're in a new day with her. I think that's all that needs to be. I think there just needs to be a feeling of sustained importance that's put on her. That's what she has not had before, and that's what I think would change the game for her.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, cause, yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, right. Because she doesn't have to wrestle every week. She can just do what every other champion does anyway, just cut promos like they usually do. They don't wrestle every week. So I get that. That does make sense.
Sometimes simpler is better too. Yeah, just not be scarce, but just keep things simple. You know, if people like the character and there's a connection to it, don't make it complicated. Just be pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Build up opponents and you know, make sure the opponents are different, so she has something different to say during each feud, and tell a story that lasts one match or two or three matches, and then move to the next thing. It doesn't have to be difficult sometimes. You know, some characters they need you know, layers and nuance and quote creativity, and other times just be straightforward. People like pro wrestling; they like to cheer for somebody to beat somebody in a fight.
Yeah, and I think Liv has been going on the mic lately anyways. It's back to her feud with Becky. She's really been going on the mic pretty much all year. So I've been enjoying Liv on the mic. It's been good. So I guess, too, and I guess what makes this, at least the women's division, this is why I think for me it makes that interesting, because the women's division is going to be more exciting with Liv as champion, what they're doing with Lacey finally turning her heel, because I wasn't feeling her at all. Being a baby phase is like, what did you do with her? So, and it's like, because another thing too, I just realized as well, is that when she punches Aaliyah right in the face, it's like Aaliyah doesn't mean anything either. So I guess another thing is that how can you build up other women heading into, you know, everybody felt like that at one point, Liv felt that like not being that important. How can you make sure they build up every other person that, you know, of course Lacey's already been in that situation, so she's a heel, so she's going to be doing something, and whoever dream with anyone, someone, Raquel's there, so she's going to be majorly pushed, and of course, Ronda, but then, you know, I think back to for Shotzi, for example, because what happened at Money in the Bank, she's getting all that flack of how she was unsafe, and she did and all that stuff, and I was like, that's kind of unfair. Like, the match itself wasn't all that great, but it wasn't really her fault. It is what it was. It was a chaotic, unpredictable situation that, you know, now is all ladder matches are unpredictable. You know what's going to happen. It's all chaos anyway. Can't be all flawless. So, but my whole point with that is that how can they just build the rest of these women up heading into like to that does involve the championship, like involving the championship. Can he build up like for Lacey, for example, what do you think who she can feud with as a secondary women's match? If try to think who that could be. Is someone like a Leah or a Shotzi to be? It won't be like Raquel right away, you would think, or could it be?
Nick, what do you think?
I think that what you're driving at is the lack of depth in the women's division on both shows that really leaves different. There's no layers, right? There's the folks that are really at the lowest level of presentation versus the real main event acts, and that there is no real sustained mid card of the women's division. I think that that's the problem. So when we talk about Lacey Evans and where could she go, I think that a lot of what happened with the departure of Sasha Banks and Naomi was taking out those real strong competitors who also weren't in the championship level. Like, I did feel like we were building a little towards that of having, you know, a different layer there, and that's gone. And I don't have an answer for you, Kyle. I think that there is going to need to be a look at mixing up some of these rosters from the women's division perspective. But, you know, with Lacey, I think in the immediacy, nothing sticks out to me as a viable opponent for her. I do think that we're headed down the path where we really need Bayley to come back. I think Bayley would be really strong for the roster, specifically on SmackDown if she were to return. And, you know, eventually, obviously, we have Charlotte coming back. But, I don't have an answer for you. I think it's really the philosophy of how they're approaching women that is the real issue, rather than so much just having – you know, one quick answer for you.
Yeah. Cause,
all right, Kyle.
Yeah. Because again, the star power is on Raw. Last star power on Raw in the men's division and also the women's division. So yeah. But I guess I'll move on. As I'll talk about this Roman Reigns Lesnar match that I can hopefully this last minute same match will be better than the WrestleMania match. I can only hope, you know, that with the stipulation will make it better. I would hope. And then also to just have a new champion. If it's going to be Fury, I can't really imagine that happening, but I guess it could. But this is why I wanted Rollins to win the briefcase. It would be more, I would think, realistic to see Seth Rollins pinning Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar, but Fury doing it. I can't really see it. I have to really see it to believe it. I do need that title off of Reigns and not on Lesnar. So, however they'll do it, that needs to happen fast. And I'll just leave it with that.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. Nick, is there anything on SmackDown we didn't cover that you wanted to bring up or react to?
No, I really like the Gunther and Shinsuke Nakamura potential that could be on the other side of this thing. But that was really it. I think we dissected the show pretty much.
Do you think WWE was dishonest and deceptive in a way that they should be called out for in terms of advertising Sheamus Drew as heavily as they did and then delivering something really quick of Drew beating Butch?
I think if people cared more, then they might be accused of that. But it didn't stick out to me. I think that would be going too far with it.
They didn't really have another match they could put on in the main event spot on this lineup. You know, I mean, I guess they could have hyped Raw. They could have hyped a rematch, the Rousey Natalya, but that was so short too. You know, but they could have gone longer with it, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I didn't feel like this was like a full-throated promo either, though. Leading up to it, I thought it was whatever.
All right, two quick emails to wrap up, both on Vince McMahon. Zach says, I don't know how anyone can compartmentalize a Wall Street Journal story on Vince McMahon today and just enjoy SmackDown. The allegations of that article are absolutely horrendous and paint Vince as nothing short of a predator. The initial allegations focused on Vince's behavior within his executive capacity, which is why he stepped back from his role as CEO and chairman. Today's report makes it clear that behavior extended to the talent as well. The article described in horrifying detail how he allegedly preyed on one of the female wrestlers. I don't know how any woman backstage could feel safe or comfortable around this guy. He shouldn't be backstage anymore either at this point. The board can terminate his contract, and they must exercise that right. Just before SmackDown went on the air tonight, it was reported that Netflix pulled the plug on the Vince documentary, and good for them. Thank you, Netflix. It's going to take that kind of help to push the board to doing the right thing. Enough is enough. Nick, yeah, that Netflix news is kind of what I was talking about at the top of the show. It's not going to be the fans not watching or not attending, and it's not going to be Vince, you know, just deciding it's best to retire or step aside because it's embarrassing. It's going to be other things, whether it's Rock and Cena saying, no, we don't want to do anything with you, celebrities turning away opportunities, and that hurts the business and the board notices. But it's those big corporate partners, and Netflix isn't Fox or NBC Universal, but that's not nothing. That is embarrassing for Vince McMahon, and it's making headlines. Your thoughts?
Well, it's going to be Fox and NBC. That's going to be the checkmate on him, and I think that moment is going to happen. I just don't see – there's no way out of this thing, right? There's no positive twist on this. And, you know, here's the thing. The one part of the letter that I wouldn't say I disagree with, but I would struggle with to say, like, how can you enjoy tonight and compartmentalize it? Because I still think as wrestling fans, none of this is really shocking to us. We've been desensitized over decades of the behavior. So it's like, I don't think everyone's excusing it, but it's almost like we've just been, you know, this is what happens when there's systemic issues in a culture. And you come to this point where none of us are surprised that there's these kind of accusations that exist in wrestling with a promoter. If you want to attach it to Vince McMahon, that's your right to say that you thought that this doesn't surprise you, or it does with him. But this was a misogynistic business and just field of work for almost all the eras in which we all were alive. So to think that this stuff wasn't going on is more shocking to me than anybody thinks that it is. And, you know, you can only hope that, you know, as a result of this stuff coming out, it'll create a better work environment for the women of that company.
Yeah. And the other email is Rob from LA, who called and he had to hang up, but he emailed in and just is ranting about his discontent with WWE. But we have gone long. We're up against the top of the hour here. We'll wrap up there, Nick. Thank you so much. Tell people about your show with Tom and what they can catch up on or look forward to from you and him.
Yeah, well, I'll be up in 7.5 hours to record with Tom Colihue, who is, I think, one of the best minds out there, who offers commentary on wrestling. We have Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, which comes out every Saturday afternoon, is usually when it's posted on the PW Torch VIP site. I think it's, you know, a lot of great, thoughtful, super entertaining commentary on the state of WWE. It's a show that you have to listen to fully grasp, but I think if you were ever not expecting to find a wrestling show that consistently brings up Rosie O'Donnell, this is the show for you.
Excellent. Nick, always a pleasure. Let's not let 2 months go by before doing this again.
All right, Mr. Wade, it was good talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks, callers. Thanks, listeners. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.